Hello, everybody, and welcome to Radio Free Asgard, episode number 117. We are still the only Thor podcast, hosted by a true descendant of Odin and a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. This is Tom Harris in Chicago, Illinois. Welcome along to the show. And I have a couple of shout-outs real quick here before we get started. I don't remember if I've actually done this or not. If not, I am sadly remiss. Welcome to Christopher Bendorf and Bradley Lever, who are the two newest members of the Radio Free Asgard Facebook group. And I do make a point of welcoming everybody personally to the group on the show, but I think I'd forgotten. I think it was in all the excitement of me going on vacation for a week, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, so welcome, guys, to the show. Yeah, and Christopher's already been busy posting in the Facebook group. We need more people posting in the Facebook group. How many people have seen the 13 new images from Thor 2, which have recently been posted over at Marvel.com? Interesting. Very, very interesting. And it's really piqued my interest. I mean, I was kind of wondering if this was going to be a bomb. You know, at least design-wise, this movie is looking spectacular. A sharp-eyed viewer, I don't remember who it is, somebody in the Facebook group, noticed that the stone dudes that Thor seems to be parleying with here look like the stone men from Saturn, a.k.a. the Cronins, and Marvel.com has actually confirmed that these are Cronins. So we actually get the stone men from Saturn in Thor 2, which is kind of cool, though. I really wish that they had the right proportions, and by the right proportions, I mean that they look like the stone men as Jack Kirby drew them in Journey into Mystery. I really would have liked to have seen that. As it is, they just kind of look like Conehead versions of the Thing, which I guess is okay, but, you know, I would rather see something, you know, more original. It makes me wonder, though, you know, in the comics, certainly they are more Thing-like than they are in the movie stills. And I wonder if that's because the Cronins have, like, dosed themselves as cosmic rays or something. Maybe that's why the Thing looks like he does. So it's worth a thought, you know. I mean, it's like no prize material, I suppose. They don't look much like the Thing in the old comics, though, I have to say. Anyway, yeah, but the new pictures that we're seeing coming out look really, really good. And for the first time, I'm really, really looking forward to Christopher Eccleston's Malekith. He looks fantastic. Not the way he does in the comics, but that would be almost impossible to do and be convincing. It would be kind of like those aliens from Star Trek, the ones that were white on one side and black on the other side. That would be really, really tough to pull off in a big budget movie and make it look good. And I think that they've done the best they can here in making it look good. And you can definitely see that, you know, he's got the like scarring or something on one side of his face, which I think is kind of what Simonson was going for in those original issues anyway. But like I said many, many times, you really can't transport a comic verbatim into movies because the design aspect just doesn't work. In comics, you can literally do anything. And in movies, you're very much restricted by reality or CG. And it would be really hard to make that Walt Simonson design really look good on the screen. But the fact that they're using Malekith to begin with is something I think is pretty darn cool. So you can go over to Marvel.com and check out the 13 new images there. I have to say, Loki's looking really good. I didn't like the anime hair that he had back in the Avengers, but he's back to looking, you know, decent again. The one thing I don't like, and I mentioned this on the Facebook group, is Thor's hair. It looks like Legolas from Lord of the Rings. Thor doesn't have elf hair. No, Thor doesn't. Anyway, it's a quibble. It's a mere quibble. Anyway, so don't have a whole lot else to talk about here before we go on to our review. This week, we are going to be looking at Thor, God of Thunder once again. We have some catching up to do here, at least three issues, so we know what we'll be doing for the next few weeks, don't we? Anyway, let's go ahead and move along to the review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, mighty Thor.
So this week we'll be covering Thor, God of Thunder, number 8. Has a cover date of July of 2013, even though I think it came out in May. It's that advanced dating thing, folks. Retailed for $3.99. Cover art is by Esad Rebic. Beautiful cover here of Gore the God Butcher, who, frankly, I'm pretty sick of. And he's torturing a god of some description or another. I don't know if it's supposed to be Thor, but it doesn't look like him. So anyway, so Gore is ripping apart this person with his shadow tendril thingies. And of course, this scene does not actually appear inside the book. On the cover, we also have the title of the story, God Bomb Part 2. And we open up to the splash page, which is a very familiar image. I think we saw this on the splash page of last issue of Thor, of modern day's Thor, I guess Thor the Avenger, I guess you could call him, standing here with a blood-stained hammer covered in gore, maybe literally covered in gore. And we have the title of the story, God Bomb Part 2 of 5, God in Chains. And of course we have the credit. Jason Aaron was the writer, Esad Rebic was the artist, Ives Sforzina was the colorist, VC's Joe Sabino was the letterer. Esad Rebic, of course, did the cover, like I already said. Jake Thomas was the assistant editor. Lauren Sankovich was the editor. Axel Alonso, the editor-in-chief. Joe Quesada is the chief creative officer. Dan Buckley was the publisher. And Alan Fine is the executive producer. And we pick up where we left off with Thor the Avenger. That is our present-day Thor, as I've been calling him. And Old Man Thor, Ancient Thor, King Thor, whatever you want to call him. And the two of them are sailing across the deeps of space in the flying boat. I don't know if it's supposed to be Skidbladnir or not. I just honestly don't remember. And I'm not going to go back and look. The two of them are talking here. Younger Thor is saying, I grow battle-starved. How much farther to the God Butcher's lair?
Still a billion light-years. But we got a good solar wind at our backs and ale aplenty. We've no more ale. Hela's pale bosom, boy. Go polish thine hammer, or practice growing a beard before I cast thy ass overboard. Or better yet, get thee to sleep. Believe me, once we make landfall on that unholy world of Gore, there will be little time for relaxation. And we shift scenes to the unholy world of Gore, where we have young Thor, that is Thor from long ago, from, you know, 988 AD or whenever the hell he came from, and he's carrying around rocks and being whipped by the servants of Gore and going, Garg! And Thor's pretty angry that these shadow demon guys keep whipping him, and he's like, that shall be the last time you ever whip an heir to Asgard, you black-eyed wretch. Carry thine own damn rocks. And he smushes the guy with a rock. He starts yelling, come then, you dogs of Gore. This god is no man's slave. And a hand reaches out and yanks Thor by the hair and just kind of wallops him one. Kicks him in the face or hits him in the face. It looks like she kicks him. And it's this beautiful blonde-haired girl. And she's like, you jackass, what the hell do you think you're doing?
What?
Who dares lay hand on?
I dare, pretty boy. And she smacks him again.
Get back to work, or I'll break both your arms and have you sent to the mines to clean boots with your tongue, since it seems that's your strongest muscle.
You would have me submit to the will of Gore like a gutless troll? Never! To see such cowardice among thy fellow gods fills me with shame for all divinity.
Cowards? Did this idiot boy god just call us cowards?
And we see there are three women here. We have the tall, statuesque, Viking-looking blonde woman. And then we have a kind of a waifish, red-haired, kind of weird-looking girl. And somewhere in the middle, we have an orange-haired girl who's not quite as statuesque or beautiful as the blonde-haired one. The waifish one is saying,
I'm of a mind to reach in through his stupid beardless face and rip out his stones. Maybe he'll be a bit less annoying as a eunuch.
But it's such a handsome face. Seems a shame to waste it, not to mention those stones.
Down, girls! You, new god, pick up your pebble and get back in line. I won't tell you again. I'm not going to let you get some poor god killed with your immature pride.
The only ones who will die here today are these black-hearted lapdogs of...
Tone down the braggadocio for 1 second and look around, you dolt. Every time you make a ruckus like this, Gore crucifies another god.
And they look up to the top of this hill, and there's a bunch of crucified gods up there. And Thor looks aghast, and the blonde girl continues to berate him.
If it was just you, no big loss. One less steel-headed godling in the world. But I have friends hanging on those crosses.
Nidog's blood. We have to...
What you have to do is shut your mouth and get back to carrying heavy things. Now!
Humph. Still think we should have gelded him.
There's something awfully familiar about this god.
Tell me, what goddesses are you?
We're not gods anymore, and neither are you. You're slaves now. Get used to it.
And Thor doesn't like hearing that, and he's like, damnable bunch of wenches. So we have a little bit of narration here as we see scenes of Thor, and he's being a good god, I guess, and he's carrying heavy rocks and doing his job, and we have a little bit of narration.
And so it was that Thor Odinson of the Viking Age first met Atli, Elisiv, and Frigg, Vodun's daughter, the goddesses of thunder from an eon hence, his own future grandchildren. The gods mined broken moons in silence, voices that once spoke whilst galaxy obeyed, now reduced to frightened whimpers and feeble weeping. Kings of heaven and hell, who had sat atop opulent thrones, now squatted in muck and their own filth. These were gods in whose image great temples had been erected, in whose names epic wars had been waged for generations. But now, glassy-eyed and hollow, not even they could remember who they were. That will never be me, thought the god of thunder. Never in a million millennia would my spirit break so utterly. But at the same time, he thought, it best not to wait too many millennia to find out. And he drops this big rock he's carrying with a thoom. And he looks up and he sees something and he's saying out loud, what the hell is that thing then? And he hears an answer, and it's this little miniature Gore. Remember from the issue that was drawn by Butch Geis, the fill-in issue, and we find that Gore had a kid? Well, this is Gore's kid. Unlike that kid, who seemed kind of like a helpless little kid, this one's kind of bratty and snotty, so I'm going to give him a voice that's a bratty and snotty voice.
A bum. The bum that's going to kill all the gods.
No bum can kill gods, boy. Certainly not all of them.
This bomb will. Gore designed it himself. You'll see soon enough. After 400 years of labor, it's almost finished.
And you think this is a good thing, killing of gods?
It will be a better world without gods. No more fear of eternal damnation or lust for eternal reward. No more hatred between believers of rival faiths. Without the lie of eternity to serve as our crutch, we will have no choice but to finally cherish what precious little time we have, and to put our faith in only ourselves and one another.
This kid sounds actually kind of reasonable.
That's what Gore taught you, isn't it? What is he to you, child?
He is everything. He's my father.
Your father is a butcher and a madman.
Of course you would say that. You're a god. You fear him. But I wonder... How many is your father butchered?
To hell with both our fathers. You would flee this world while you can, son of Gore. You and whatever family you have. Your father is going to die for what he's done. By mine own hands, fate's willing.
And Gore Jr., if that is in fact his name, sends out a tendril of the shadow stuff at Thor's throat. And has kind of grabbed him around the neck with his stuff. And the Thor's like,
never speak of my father. He's a great man, and you are but a jealous god.
Open your eyes, boy. He isn't a man at all. Not anymore.
Get back to work, slave, before I have you crucified. Every one of you will be forgotten. Every god ever spawned. All your temples will be dust. Your holy books burn to ash, but my father's name will never die. Do you hear me, gods of men? The name of Gore the Redeemer will live forever. We then shift scenes back to the flying ship and the two Thors who are hurtling towards God's unholy planet. And we get a little bit more exposition here. King Thor's snoring shook the rigging. Galaxies passed by in a blur. Thor the Avenger held the great wheel steady and called forth the solar storms and all the interstellar winds he could muster to push the flying dragon ship ever faster through the cosmic currents. Faster than the speed of light or all known laws of man. Faster than all but the boldest of gods had ever dared. He talked to his hammer as he sailed. He talked to his hammer as he sailed, chasing the stench of dead gods across the spaceways. Talk to his hammer? Even I don't talk to my hammer. He struggled to put doubts from his mind, worries that burned within Gore's vengeful rents. There was some small ember of truth, a truth that threatened to consume him. Thor sailed on, craving combat with every ounce of his being. Combat, and just a bit more ale. We then shift back to the Gore God Bomb planet, where we have a bunch of gods. They're sitting around a big fire. There's a cauldron in the fire. And we get a little caption here. Gore's god slaves worked for days on end without pause, without sleep. But every seventh day, they were allowed a few moments' rest. And on the seventh day, they rested. This was Gore's idea of a joke. Very Earth-centric joke, I would have to say. And we have tall, blonde goddess, Thor's granddaughter, who I don't know which one of the it is. They say, three more days at the most, and after that, Gore's bomb will be finished, and we'll all be dead, along with every other god ever born. And looking around, you can see, you know, various kind of gods. There's a sort of green, goofy-looking armored guy with horns, and you got a pink guy with Spock ears, and actually looks kind of like Lieutenant Eryx from the animated Star Trek. And it's kind of generic, kind of horned and various shaped god people around. But Thor's granddaughters are kind of standing front and center. And of course, they have like the clothes that look perfect and everyone else is wearing rags.
Then we wait no longer, said the green horned armored dude. We must take our shot. We cannot be ruled by panic. This will be our only chance. We need more time to gather weapons and find the perfect moment.
More time? Most of us have been here for centuries. There is no more time.
The when we can debate, but first we must settle on the who. Who do we trust to lead the way? Who has strength to carry the burden, knowing that even if they succeed, they will most assuredly die?
If you're talking about destroying that bomb and killing the bastard Gore, then look no further, says a voice. I'm your god. And of course it turns out to be young Thor.
The eunuch? Who let him in?
No offense, friend, but we don't even know who you are.
I am the favorite son of Odin the Omnipotent, heir to the throne of eternal Asgard, the lord of the storm and god of the thunder, him before whom even Vikings bow. They call me Thor.
Thor? Oh, my heavens! I've been having impure thoughts about my grandfather. Gore has been known to pull gods out of the time stream. But if you're really who you say, then you should have no trouble summoning a thunderstorm to cover our attack.
He's no Thor. We're the goddesses of thunder, and even we can't summon storms in this miserable dunghole.
I've tried, but this world is too barren. There are no storms here that answer Thor's call.
Don't feel too bad. Haint the rain god can't even make it dew anymore, and Gord the wine lord can only turn water into vinegar. We need more weapons if we're going to cross the black plain and reach that bomb. Clubs, sharp stones, whatever we can find.
This bomb, can it really kill all the gods?
Gore has proven himself to be many things, but a liar isn't one of them.
Then what is your plan?
To destroy the bomb before it's finished.
That thing is the size of a moon. How do you expect to destroy it with a few ragged slaves armed with clubs and sharp stones?
For 900 years, we ragged slaves have mined the cores of dead stars and broken planets building Gore's god bomb. This is every scrap of unstable matter that we've been able to steal and hide over the years. He's got his bomb, we've got ours. And they have this tiny little package about the size of a, looks like about the size of a loaf of bread there. And it's wrapped in purple bandages. But the question still remains, how do we get close enough to the God Bomb to destroy it without being swarmed by black berserkers?
We rush them! Every god who can walk all at once!
It won't work! Gore's weapon's too strong! His berserkers are everywhere!
Then we sneak our bomb as close as we can and detonate it by hand!
That's suicide!
It's the only way! One god must die for the rest to survive!
Then let's see a show of hands. Which god will volunteer to go?
And they turn around and the package of unstable elements are gone. And she's like, oh, you stupid, stupid Thor. Everyone's like, huh? Like anybody wouldn't notice him stealing this. We cut to Thor. He's grabbed the package and he's racing off towards the bomb. And he's saying, one last storm. That's all I ask. If today the God of Thunder must die screaming, then let the skies scream with me. He sees like the shadow beings and they're guarding the bomb. And we actually hear a rumble of thunder going on. And the three granddaughters of Thor are trying to organize. Everyone's like, set every god on their feet. The pivotal battle begins now.
Wait, listen.
And they see lightning crackling and Thor's running among the shadow beast and smacking them down. And they're being struck by lightning with a koom. One of the goddesses is like,
he made it rain fire. I've always wanted to make it rain fire.
I'll be damned. He is Thor.
Go, Granddad, go.
Thor is kind of reaching the base of the bomb. He kind of hurls the package at it. We get a little bit of exposition here. As he raced towards his death through the rain of fire, young Thor's mind was empty of all but rage. No thoughts of Asgard, or of the father's love he would never live long enough to earn. No thoughts of the maidens yet to be wooed, the sagas yet to be written. That damn hammer. He would regret not having lifted that dam, and he throws it. The package lands with a thunk, and you see a huge explosion along the side of the bomb. It goes boom! And we see it's kind of smoke and a big explosion and kind of indeterminate of what's going on here, if anything. Reverberations kind of reflect out into space, and we have the ship again, of course, sailing towards Gore's planet with the two older Thors. Old King Thor is like, did you feel that?
Yes, there was a great storm in the distance, though it passed quickly. Now all I feel is pain and fire ripping through my guts. We can move carefully from here on out. Our prey is near.
And we see that the ship is now in orbit above Gore's planet, and there's these kind of giant space sharks flying around here, and they're eating the corpses of, I guess, the gods that have been thrown into space by Gore. I guess that's what it is. Anyway, they're space sharks. Space sharks are cool. And they're going around eating people. Old man Thor is like,
best fetch your hammer, boy. I sense something stirring. Something close. Something strangely familiar.
You see the sharks kind of swirling around the ship, but we also see a hand reaching out to touch the starship. This character hauls himself aboard, and he's going, rawr! And Thor the Avenger's like, take heed, he's got a... And he gets smacked across the face with a shark, one of these space sharks, the flonk. And then the shark is deflected by King Thor with a shark-coom, which is a great sound effect for being whopped by a shark. And modern-day Thor is like, what just happened?
You were struck in the face with a shark. That's what I thought. What manner of foul beast has Gore conjured for us this time? The foulest, I'm afraid.
And they see who it is, and it turns out to be young Thor. And he's like,
is that? Yes, lucky me. Another one.
And you see young Thor standing there with his mouth open. He's holding on to the tail of this dead shark that he just whopped himself with.
Who are you grizzled old bastards, and what is your business here? If you be slave traders, you will answer this day to... Father, is that you? Boar's bones, are you certain there isn't any ale left?
Then shift scenes to a few minutes later, a couple hours later. We have young Thor, and he's putting on some new armor in the hold of the ship. And, modern-day Thor's talking to him.
You sure you're up for this? You just escaped from Gore's slave world, and now you're about to go marching right back in. If you two old farts are up for it, then I guess that means I am as well, doesn't it? Blasted time travel. Whoever knew there was such a thing? Then arm yourself, boy, and be quick about it.
And he looks at the hammer, Mjolnir, and he kind of side glance, because obviously he doesn't have Mjolnir yet here. Thor the Avenger grabs the hammer, because it's his hammer, obviously. Says, I'll be topside. Don't dawdle. I know how you love to dawdle. And he gets this weird look on his face, like, that hammer's mine, man. And he comes up on the deck of the ship, finally, and he's got a hammer, but it's not Mjolnir. It's just kind of this big old sledgehammer-looking thing. Old man Thor's like, is that the world you just blasted yourself off of, young Thor?
Aye, that's it.
And the great bomb you said you destroyed? The God Bomb. It would have been right. By all the pits of hell, it's untouched. I didn't so much as scratch the damn thing. Let us hope you're a better slayer of God Butchers than you are a dismantler of bombs.
And young Thor is all angry and he's yelling out, Gor! Come down from your castle, you bloodless bastards! The gods of thunder have come, and we would have words with thee!
Nay, the time for words is past, says present-day Thor. Now we let the hammers talk.
And we have the three Thors united and ready for battle. And that is Thor, God of Thunder, number 8. Well, as sick as I am of gore, and as tired as I am of this story that's gone on for way too long, I think it's a pretty damn good issue. I really like it. I like this issue a lot. I like almost everything about it. I like the artwork. I think the artwork, absolutely beautiful. Again, there's a little bit of wonkiness here and there in Esad Ribic's art, but by and large, this painted art is gorgeous. The flying space sharks is just kind of silly, but it's believable, I guess, in a Marvel Comics kind of way. That's okay. I'm willing to suspend my disbelief here and assume that flying, glowing outer space sharks are a thing. I like the fact that, you know, young Thor failed in what he set out to do. How he ended up in space, though, I don't know, because of the way the angle of the explosion. He leapt towards the bomb. He hurled the package of unstable minerals or whatever it is at the bomb. It goes boom. And I don't see how that could have possibly propelled Thor into space. I just don't see it. If anything, it should have propelled him back into the ground. Just judging from the angle of this blast. Had he jumped on top of the bomb and done the same thing, well, maybe then. So there's a little bit of inconsistency there involving the laws of physics. That's a little bit harder for me to get over than flying space sharks, I have to say. It just doesn't make sense. It seems very contrived as that would be the way that he would end up on the flying spaceship. And so that just doesn't seem very realistic to me. As realistic as three thunder gods on a flying spaceship being surrounded by giant space sharks are. I'd have to point out again how a lot of the aspects of Gore's practices seem to be Earth-centric. For example, the way he's crucifying all these gods. Of course, I can imagine a little bearded guy in the background going, no, not again. But it just seems like they're drawing a bit too much from Earth mythology rather than come up with something unique. I mean, crucifixion? I mean, yeah, sure. I mean, it has some resonance culturally for us. And obviously, we're the ones who the story is being written for. But still, you would think with the entire universe of gods to choose from and all the dozens of myriad mythologies there are out there, that Gore could have come up with something cool that we hadn't seen before. All right, so that is it for this episode. Thanks very much for listening again, folks. And of course, if you want to email the show, you can do so. We have an email address, and that is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. And you can join our Facebook group. Yeah, there's more and more all the time. So feel free to join us over there and comment in on the threads or start new threads, which is always good to hear. And that is it for this week. So thanks very much for listening from Chicago, Illinois. This is Tom Harris saying, see you next week here on Radio Free Asgard.